Yes, I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Waru Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you can support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WaruiDesho or email us at waruidesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show.
So
hello, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs. Welcome to Waru Desho, and you are in the stream of
thought. No, stop. It's a beach episode. No one gives a fuck. That's it. We're off. Night. Bye.
Just kidding. Hi, hello. It's Waru Desho Stream of Thought, where we are going to give this episode its proper treatment. I hope you like your French toast sunbaked, because the French toast hour takes place on the beach.
Spring break! Woo! Woo! Treasure that, folks. It ain't ever happening again.
Here to cover all the barbecues, the shitty like DJs and skimpy bathing suits, it is I, the slow taku, the subtle doctor, and alongside me, the ever present, effervescent, scrumtralescent, Shabranigdo, the Dark Lord, Dutch Shadan.
Hey everyone.
Cool. Okay. By the way, if anyone gets the reference I dropped, please at me, because I want to be your friend. We all need to be friends, whoever understands Dragon Slave. Right. Episode 7, Darling in the Franxx, Shooting Star Moratorium. Are you ready, Shadan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm ready to talk about... you know... I genuinely think sometimes that this anime has a sentient will of its own, because we keep making jokes or suggestions that somehow come true in some way or another. Like in one of the previous episodes, I suggested, why don't they just go and fucking steal Strelizia, and then they go and steal Strelizia, of course. Mm-hmm. And in just the previous episode, I literally joked that there was a bit of fan service in it, that Ichigo's ass. I was like, well, it would make sense if it was from Goro's perspective. And, you know, then I could at least point to it and say that's why it's there, as opposed to it not existing. And guess what we got in this episode? You really do get if you do ask for it.
Well, there you go.
Oh,
clearly A1 and Trigger are listening in. They're definitely downloading this every week. No question.
If only so they like can properly like find out who we are. They're piecing together hints, you know. So
send agents.
Oh yeah, no, literally someone is just going to come and kick down my door, and they're going to be dressed in a... God, what were they called again? An Ultima uniform or something, and just going to beat the everything shit out of me.
They're going to smother you with a Daikimura body pillow.
Ah! That's something I don't want on my...
That's the way we want to go out right there. With your waifu strangling you, such that you can't... All right, this is getting far too personal. I'm getting a little... Is it hot in here now? Is it... Can we fix this?
No, it's just the beach, mate.
I gotta take a sip. All right. Getting back on track. So, let's talk creatives. The director for this episode, Lucky Number 7, is a person called Toko Yatabe, who I had a little bit of trouble finding information on because Toko is spelled differently on Wikipedia than it is on Anime News Network.
I thought you were going to say then that you were struggling to find out who he was because the directors are gradually getting more and more obscure.
Well, look, that is... Yes. Okay, so it's nothing like last week in which the person had literally no other credits, but the CVs for the episode director and the episode writer are skimpy. They are like the swimsuits and school uniform skirts in this show. Skimpy.
Incredibly revealing.
I don't know how revealing they are about the people themselves. They might be, I'm going to go on a limb and say, revealing about the sort of goals of this episode. But I'll get into that. I'll get into that in a moment. So Yatabe has mainly been an animator, despite being the episode director. They've done key animation for Little Witch Academia, the TV show, and the Enchanted Parade OAV.
Mm-hmm.
Key animation for the first episode of Flip Flappers, which was quite good. And then some in-betweening. They have done one episode directing job before. They also did that. They directed episode 2 and storyboarded episode 2 of a television show entirely forgotten by Western fandom called Three Leaves, Three Colors. From 2016. I'm sure no one listening to this show has watched it. If you have, please tweet at Warui Desho and tell me what I missed.
Tell us if there are indeed free leaves and free colors.
Yes, it's a burning question. I want to know desperately. The writer's CV is actually even more sparse. One, Rino Yamazaki. And Yamazaki is credited with something called production advancement, which I actually have no idea what this job is.
Is that his self-help book?
What I'm getting a picture of in my head is like, so have you seen Shirobako, Shodan?
I can't say I have.
Okay. So Shirobako, for anyone who hasn't seen it, was a really beloved show from a few years ago, 2015, I believe, it's an anime about the process of making anime.
Oh, yes. I know of it, but I haven't seen it.
It's very good, worth watching for sure. The lead character in that, the first season of the show, the first core, rather, she is like just kind of running around delivering envelopes with cuts in them to various animators' like houses and just kind of keeping things on track. And I can't even remember what her title is. She gets a more prestigious title for the second show they work on, but that's the picture in my head I get of Rino Yamazaki, production advancement for a handful of episodes of things, Madoka Box, Madoka Box Abnormal, Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt, just a few episodes here and there, but now this person is the episode writer for Darling in the Franxx episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Gainax connection here to trigger. And our animation director has a much more beefy CV.
So he actually has one.
Yeah, this is a big one, right? So it's one, Satoshi Yamaguchi. And Yamaguchi has done like key animation for Denu Coil, The Idolmaster, which is, of course, where I think probably the director plucked him from. Was the animation director for an episode of Hayate the Combat Butler, much beloved. The animation director for a few episodes of Occultic Nine, which that show, I'm struggling to remember if the animation itself was good, but the art design and the production design of that show was really good. Oh, also, let's see, animation director for an episode of Strike Witches, a key animator for a whole bunch of things. So this is a very experienced animator getting to direct this episode of Darling in the Franxx, which, like, I mean, I guess will be a nice line for their CV, but I'm struggling to recall any very nice bits of of animation.
Oh, well, you know, Doc, it is the beach episode, and obviously they can't afford anything but the best for the beach episode. Like, the action scenes they're going on previously, or the, you know, the drama, the inter-character stuff, all that. Nah, we're getting the big guns in for this one.
The TNA animation, which was like, by the way, which was like standard for, like, it's not like they raised the bar, I guess is what I mean for the beach episode. I felt like, I mean, this episode, the character animation was fine and the characters look good, but it was like of a piece with the rest of it is I guess what I mean.
Yeah, that seems about right. I mean, there was a nice bit with Zorame getting in a flap at one point and also some good stuff with Zero Two.
Oh, for sure. Yes. Great stuff in those cases. I don't think this is one. I'm not going to be sitting my grandkids on my knee saying, let me tell you about the animation in Darling in the Franxx episode 7. The time Zorame tried to kiss Hiro on the mouth. It was pretty memorable and epic.
You're certainly selling it right here and now to me, never mind to your kids. But okay, let me get a preemptive thing out of the way here, because I'm sure that long-time listeners to Stream of Thoughts, Warrior Dash in particular, probably thinking to themselves, okay, I'm waiting for Shads to go apocalyptic over this, because we know that he is allergic to fan service. Comes out in fucking hives every time he sees it come up. And to you people, I say, that is not so. Because, here's the thing about this episode, it wasn't pretending to be something else. It was honest up front with me pretty much from the start. I think that when it comes to fan service, I have a problem with it if it breaks what you might call an unspoken agreement.
I'm so sorry. It's, you haven't said anything wrong. My stupid brain. I'm just thinking about, like, you as the Jean-Jacques Rousseau of anime criticism, writing about the social contract of anime with its audience.
Well, I do need to buy a beret at some point to put on my bald head, so that'll work. But anyway, let me put it this way, folks. Let's imagine that you went into a bookstore and you bought, let's say, a fantasy novel, and you open up said fantasy novel and it's just entirely made up of postcards of half-naked women. Now, all the individual postcards that might be in there could be fantastic to look at for whatever reason you want to name, because they're titillating, because they're well shot, because they're well lit, you name it. But at the end of the day, you bought a fantasy novel and you didn't get it, so you have every right to be annoyed.
I just want to know why you got to pick on my example. All right, I'm a burgeoning fantasy author trying to do sales. I'm trying to do whatever I can to push my product, get on the shelves at Barnes & Noble. The bookstores are dying. I need something to pull in the customers, okay? Just ease off. God.
Well, to be fair, I suppose the giveaway would have been that Boob Witches of the West was, you know, the title. So there we go. That's the thing, like, you won't ever hear me complain, for example, about a pornographic magazine containing pornography. Because that's what it is. And I'm not against fan service or titillation if they're either executed properly or, on an episode-by-episode basis, or even in moment slice, the entire idea of it. And the thing is, this episode does, to a small degree, get to have its cake and eat it. Because there is a little bit of stuff going on, but I also wouldn't lie to you and say that you need to actually definitely watch this episode. I mean, a lot of it is just white noise.
Yeah. It's a big old... what's the word? What do you call this? It's a piece of cotton candy. I don't know if the right word is fun. They spin it up for you. It's a blank of cotton candy, a huge puff of it.
Yeah.
And it's pink and sweet and fluffy and totally not filling. Some of you out there might might believe I am an apologist for this show and will ride or die for anything. And it's hard to say, like you, I think, just mentioned, Shadon, is whether you can entirely skip this one. Like, we'll know kind of in retrospect, I think, looking back, because they do a few things here and there. But yeah, I think a lot of it was largely fluff that was unnecessary. And, you know, I hinted at a theory about the production, like the fact that, you know, very unnotable people were like directing and writing the episode, and the fact that the episode doesn't really move much of anything forward beyond some ideas that have already been hinted at and that they probably already had nailed down, I think it's all not a coincidence, basically. I feel like if I'm really cynical, I'm gonna say, hey, what they did was, you know, the people with clout were like, let's give episode 7 to the kiddie table, and we'll be over here working on stuff for further down the road, figuring out what we're going to do. If I'm very optimistic, I'll say it's good that people without a lot of experience got to do something on a show and got some valuable experience. That's always very good.
Mm-hmm. I'm in agreement, but I'm also a proponent of the idea that this episode is what you might call a bottle show. And in live action television, a bottle show is usually something done on the cheap because they don't have the budget left the entire season. But the thing is, art often comes through adversity, in my opinion. If you have limitations in place, you can often actually do better. So while indeed this episode doesn't really have much happening in terms of grand events, save for one... You know, in some ways, I almost feel like that this show is starting to turn into one of those like point-and-click LucasArts adventure games where you collect items for later use. And you know exactly which item I'm referring to, because they could not possibly have framed it any more obviously as a thing of importance. But we'll get to that. But that being said, they could have actually taken the time to do some really strong character development in this episode. And there's bits. There's like little nuggets here and there.
Yeah, I think you could argue with like on if the bits are lateral movement for the characters or forward movement. Like
I think some of it's backwards, to be honest.
Oh well, that's also that's fair. And I'm not opposed to like kind of deepening our understanding of character traits we already know about. As you know, characters don't always have to be hurtling forward down their chosen paths or, you know, making progress on their journey. I mean, that's not what real life is like. So, I don't know. But when you're watching a show, and there's not a ton of forward movement for really anybody, I don't know. It can leave me feeling... This episode, I'll just say, left me feeling a little empty.
I just watched it, and it just kind of washed over me. Mm. I mean, there were certainly bits and bobs of it that I quite liked, and there were some bits of it that really irritated me. Because that's Frank's in a nutshell at this point. It is the most bipolar anime I've seen in a long time. But on the broad side of things, whatever. Great. I mean, again, to criticize Frank's as I've done many times, if you want to come in here for the TNA, the TNA is not that scintillating, I'm very sorry to say, with maybe one or two 0-2 moments, but that's kind of par for the course at this point.
Those are good moments, though. Don't sleep on those moments. They're good.
Oh, yeah. Don't sleep on them, but they are literally just moments.
Just buy the doujins. Make the doujins.
just do that, pretty much. So, speaking of how things don't progress, though, I need to quickly cite this particular moment, because it just made me laugh at how transparent the script is sometimes. Okay, so, why, might you be wondering, are the gang at the beach? Well, on some level, it makes sense because they've just been through a really nasty battle and they've all lived. And you know what? Let's celebrate. So why not? I get that. That's absolutely fine. Bit of downtime, bit of R&R. That's what soldiers need. There's a beach. Why the heck not? Let's go do that. So just a little ways into the episode, not quite immediately though, we get a flashback to a scene in which 0-2 and Hiro meet with Nana... and Papa, and also Dr. Franks.
Well, not Papa. That's not Papa.
No, sorry. Whoever
he is. Just Mr. Crewcut soldier guy. We don't even know his name yet, I don't think.
It's in the OP, but I never paid attention.
Oh, is it? I don't even know what it is.
All the characters have their names listed in the OP. That's how I finally learned the fat kid's name, because I specifically paid attention for it this time around, because I don't remember anything else about him.
I remember Dr. Franks, though.
Oh, how could you forget? Although, that being said, the anime thinks that you might have forgotten, because when they introduced Ms. Dr. Franks, they put a little subtitle, Dr. Franks underneath him.
The title card, the little card down there, that's great. Yeah. It's funny that they did that for him. That's what they do in Legend of the Galactic Heroes for everyone, and you need to do it in a show like that, because there are scores of characters, literally dozens and dozens and dozens of characters, so it helps. In this show... That is not the case, and we all fucking remember Dr. Franks.
Yeah, fucking Grandpa from Mega Man Legends is back again. Whoop whoop.
Hansy. Oh, Hansy with the robot jaw.
It turns out, by the way, that the whole beach thing is Dr. Franks' idea, so...
Shocking.
On some level, that creeps me out a little bit.
You know what? It does. You're absolutely right. I wonder if what he really wants to do is, you know, surveil them as Papa ordered. It's like, oh, surveillance. Rubs hands together. Let's send them to the beach. This will provide useful footage for me to analyze in great detail.
Here's how I see it going down. Mama comes in and then you just see Dr. Franks in a pair of swim shorts that've got pineapples on them or some shit. And he's got a camera in his hand and a parasol. And she's like, oh, wait. Where are you going? And he says, I'm going down to the beach. And she says, for what? Bird watching? And he goes, yes, bird watching.
Oh,
fuck yeah. I don't know. But a couple of things to know about this flashback, though. The fucking blonde kid, Cypher 2, or rather the new Cypher, because I've actually decided that Zorame is not Cypher, but he is another Final Fantasy character that I'll get to when we get to a later scene. But the other Cypher appears in, and he's almost introduced, but then he's stopped.
No, he's like, fuck you.
I'm just like, fuck's sake.
I'm not going to introduce myself.
Really?
Not now. But you know why? Because this episode is not about me. I will introduce myself in my character episode. Thank you very much.
No, I'm going to let you finish.
I'm going to let you finish, yeah.
Thinks he's fucking Kanye West.
God damn
it. This is embarrassing. Why even have him there if he doesn't... I'm talking derisively here.
Yeah.
Why have him there if he doesn't contribute anything? This is just more of a dangling... Oh, do you remember this guy? Do you remember this guy?
Don't forget.
It's like dangling keys in front of a fucking dog.
Yeah.
Like, don't put him there. If he's... You're deliberately underplaying this guy and making me not care about his reveal later on. You're actually actively working against the script by doing this. The whole idea of narrative tension and build-up. You are somehow going backwards. This is unholy.
I wish he would have just, like, shook their hands and said, hello, I'm mysterious, and then threw down a smoke bomb.
That would have been better.
Yes.
I would have been totally all right with that. But we don't get that. He's just there, metaphorically twirls his mustache and says, I'll be important later. And then he's gone. But that being said, I'm going to actually give credits this scene to the character I never thought I fucking would. But I am. Dr. Franks. Because, and I'll tell you why. So this scene establishes now that all the paperwork's been cleared. Everything's been done in triplicate. A hero and 02 are now officially partners. And
Strelizia
is deployed now. Yes, mazel tov. And Strelizia is now deployed at Plantation 13. All well and good. But Franks has a warning for Hero after 02 has left, which is, if you want to partner with her forever, don't let her consume your emotions. Now, here's the thing, right? First off, I don't think Dr. Franks is in any real, like, place to start offering advice. Given this, you know.
I've met you twice. Let me tell you something cryptic. That's just who I am.
Also, given the fact that he seems to treat women's asses as, like, you know, dogs treat squeaky toys, but anyway.
Yeah, let's take you seriously.
Yeah, fuck off, Dr. Franks. But that being said, I actually took a reading into this that I think was that... 02's not going to literally devour his emotions in the same way that she has devoured people otherwise. But rather, I think that Dr. Franks' warning was to be careful how attached he gets to 02. To not solely, like, you know, devote himself to her entirely, 100%, to allow there to be other people in his life, perhaps.
Hmm.
I think that that's the intent behind it, that it's more like, you know, to try and, as a warning to help, try and cultivate a healthy relationship. Because you can be too into someone.
Well, and especially in a, like, combat unit, you know, that you're meant to, I mean, of course this is anime, but theoretically you're meant to live and die as a team. And
yep.
you gotta stay, what's the word I'm looking for? You have to cultivate relationships with your teammates and be on a positive, good wavelengths with them and have understanding between yourselves. If you're isolated, that's just not going to happen as much. So yeah, that's a good reading of his utterance.
Yeah, it's not a literal thing. She's not going to literally devour him. But I think that it is a warning, you know, that he needs to be mindful of other people, which he's not. Still?
He sort of is. I mean, we'll get there. You've already just burned the outline. You've taken it and burned it, set it on fire, stomped on it. But I'm going to retrieve it. I'm going to dust it off. I'm going to blow out the flame, and we're going to do this sequentially.
Yes, we will. What we did neglect to mention, actually, as well, is that there's also a scene with the Grand Council of Councilness, you know, those pompous robe guys. At...
Robo bishops.
Yeah. And I got a real bad whiff of, like, future events here, because they said, oh, maybe the boy will finally take the girl to the Grand Crevasse. And I'm like, oh, God.
Ah, the Grand Crevasse. All right, okay. Let's start from the top here. Beach episode!
Whoop, whoop!
Because you didn't already know that. We talked about why they're going to the beach. Let's see. Hero and Zero Two are official. Goro is happy that he believes that the rumors about Zero Two have been proven false. And Ichigo, despite being still a little mistrustful of Zero Two, who, by the way, is, if you look on the periodic table, oxygen.
Oh. Honestly, it's everything. It's every metaphor, anything. It's every metaphor, every image, everything. It's Jesus fuck. Oh, speaking of things, I learned also that Ichigo's name is actually strawberry in Japanese.
Oh, okay. Nice. Nice. I thought it was the number, but...
It's both, apparently.
Oh, good. Okay, yes. We don't know how Japanese works.
I don't know what relevance that has to anything, but hey, there you go. She's a strawberry.
She is, and that strawberry is happy for her love, that he is happy.
Mm.
Which is, you know, painful and nice to see.
I don't think that plot point's over, to be honest.
Oh, for sure not.
Nope.
Robo bishops refer to Hero, aka 016, as failure of a special specimen when they talk about him bringing Zero Two, who they keep referring to as our girl, which feels icky. He's going to bring her to the Grand Crevice. Yeah, he's a failure of a specimen, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, hey, we're going to keep an eye on Plantation 13. We've talked about Dr. Franks and the mysterious blonde boy. Okay, so after that, there's... I can't remember if it's in the same scene or in the scene after, but I believe it's after, because it prompts the flashback, or it's cut between, whatever. Zero Two is, like, gushing upon Hero, saying, you are my wings. I got here because of you. We'll always be together, right?
Oh, when she said that, I was just there, like, if I had a tarot deck, death, death, death.
How many death flags this episode were triggered? So many, I feel like.
I mean, the life expectancy out of these people, if this was a stock market, everyone would be selling.
Yes, it's going down, 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 down.
It's a fucking fire sale, mate.
And Hero says, you know, yes, but not before remembering the good doctor, bad doctor's cryptic words. And then I have in my notes simply the kiss defined.
Okay, right.
A kiss is a very special thing that two people share, in this universe, a man and a woman, share as a, like, sign of love between those two people, that they care about each other, and they're special to each other, and that's what it is. And in this very hilarious universe that has made the physical functions, positions, and performance of sex acts into robot piloting, and has woven the terminology throughout its combat, somehow the foreplay before all that, the kiss, has taken on a heightened significance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very funny to me.
You know what's funny to me? That Zorobe says in this episode, I have never heard the word kiss before.
Well, that's not... No, that's the other guy.
Is it not Sarami?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. One of these Berks, one of them...
Yeah, Berks.
...has not heard this phrase before. They were in a briefing in which they said that fucking word
is
used to describe them.
I know. That wasn't... I feel like that's not worded quite right.
This script is a first draft. It's as simple as that.
Well, look, I really do think that... God, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus.
Do it.
But I feel like with a little bit of nuance, it's easy to make sense of this part, because I think what obviously he doesn't mean is I've never heard the word before, because like you said, the plantations just kissed where and they used the word kiss. So they've heard the word, but they've never heard they're unfamiliar with this specific usage between two human beings and the mouth to mouth contact. So yeah, who's to say if it's the script or the translation or what, but yeah, I felt like that part could have used some more massaging.
It needed a revision. This is why I think this script is a first. In fact, so much of Frank's smacks of a first draft.
Darling in the first drafts. X.
Yeah.
Somehow we're going to spell drafts with an X. Drafts.
Yeah, that would surprise me. I mean, do you recall how I said in episode 2 that apparently this show was suffering from production problems? It actually would surprise me if it turned out that these production problems were exacerbated by the scripts being rushed out. Because you kind of need those in place firstly to actually get anything underway.
Oh yeah, for
and
sure.
That would also explain why certain things don't seem to work when they would if they were just revised a little bit.
That's another reason why I think that there's credence in this episode is, to use a sports analogy, like them punting, right? They're kicking the can down the road a little bit and saying, like,
giving themselves a breathing room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, let's make this episode 80% whatever and 20% like real story content, like new stuff. And then that way it'll give us some breathing room, as you say. It's, again, I don't know that for a fact, but looking at a few sort of factors, I think it will be a reasonable conclusion to draw.
Indeed. And now I want to also talk about something else. There's not really a point in which I can discuss this because it's not brought up in the episode. So I think that now that we brought up the kissing thing, let's bring up something else.
Okay.
So let's discuss Scar's.
The Lion King has the best one.
Yes, absolutely.
And he needs to sing his fucking song in the remake. God damn it. What is the matter? What? Jon Favreau, please. Come on. Come on.
By the way, guys and girls listening at home, if you've not already done so, look up that song, Be Prepared, in German. Because it's incredible. Watching that clip with German singing over it, it's basically Nazis. It's absolutely hilarious. No, really, you've got the hyenas marching with Scar on like the top of that plinth, looking down on him, and it really is just, well... anyway, so Scar's. Now, generally speaking, I'm actually quite fond of the idea of in narratives of using scars and injuries to show that events matter. Now, I'm not saying that that necessarily needs to be done with every character who's involved in, you know, a fight, be it a small or a large fight. I don't need or want every character to be mauled. But I think that when appropriate, having an injury that leaves a mark on you, small or large, is worthwhile because it, you know, events have consequences, and it will always be a reminder when you look at that, that that happened to you. And there are examples of this in plenty of modern fiction, and indeed in video games. Metal Gear Solid 3, 4, and 5 all use scars in some way or another to show the events had consequences and mattered, 5 in particular. The Lord of the Rings, Frodo has the scar from the stab, and that, of course, is something he reflects on once or twice, and even actually outright causes him severe pain. Various points. And we're getting more Lord of the Rings references here. So, scars can have a very useful narrative function for characters. And in the case here, we mentioned that previously Hero's techno cancer is now gone. It's cured itself through magic. Whatever.
Pure human will actualized.
No.
Set to the song Don't Lose Your Way from Kill la Kill.
Oh,
if you play that song and punch something, your techno cancer would also disappear. I'm just telling you.
Honestly, that curing of the techno cancer was less plausible than what happened in Psychic Wars. They flat out punched cancer in that one. That made more fucking sense.
How dare you?
No, I do dare. Okay, but here's my point, right? Now that that's happened, though, because, of course, all the boys are only in swim trunks, we get to see that Hero now does have quite a large scar over his, you know, chest. On the one hand, I really like this because it shows that although the episode previous this one went out of its way to make the techno cancer an utter irrelevance, in my opinion, it does matter. it is going to something that's, it's something that's going to stick with Hiro for the rest of his life now. Every time that he gets changed, he's going to see that. It's going to remind him of the events that happened. So it shows that those events were important. And indeed, 02 at one point, you know, she does the whole, like, you know, tracing over his chest thing, but points specifically at that. And it then ties back to her. Every time he sees that, it's going to be a reminder of her.
How many times in anime do you see characters touch each other?
Not many. From
not often. And I mean, certainly not that. You know, you see, like, maybe some hand-holding, some cautious hand-holding. Perhaps someone touches lightly someone's cheek or, like, wipes a tear away. Like, this, every time it happens, it's happened at several times, like, it sort of produces a jolt. I mean, because it's just not used to seeing a character, like, so intimate with another on screen in an anime. It's really neat.
No, I agree. And I like that, like I say, I like the inclusion of the scar for that reason, that it matters. The events did matter. And it ties back to what Frank said, and also with what 02 said. You know, we're going to be together forever. But, you know, at what cost? Because that's already nearly killed him. What else is going to happen as a result of this? So there's a lot of nice things to take away from the fact that that's there, and I like its inclusion. However, because Frank's, the show, can't seem to, you know, have a good thing without somehow fucking it up, I realise something when I notice this. Why do none of the guys, with the exception of Goro, notice this scar and go, what the fuck is that?
Perhaps they've never been treated to the sight of Hiro being shirtless.
I'm going to swap out my soy milk for whiskey, just back in a minute.
No, they... Listen, it would be nice if... You know, even if you've never seen someone shirtless, if you see someone with a giant, you know, looked like they took a sledgehammer to the chest, and you're close friends with them as Hiro, you know, they're teammates, and before that, they're buddies. They're buddies. You know, you might ask, like, hey, what happened there?
Well, thing is, Doc, they have boys group bathing. This has been established.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They do.
So they must at some point have seen each other shirtless.
Yeah, it would have been a new thing. That's, yeah.
Now, Goro not pointing this out, I get, because he already knew about it, and obviously he's not going to reveal to everyone, oh yeah, I knew that Hiro possibly could have died. He's not going to reveal that. I mean, he's going to keep his fucking mouth shut now, prick. But anyway, the other guys don't, despite seeing this, make mention of it all. Nor do the girls. The girls wouldn't, like, the girls wouldn't even have that pretext of knowing, like, he didn't have it before. But wouldn't, like, I would have thought each girl would have seen that and be like, Jesus, Hiro, was that a fucking body mod up? Got really drunk. Did you try to get a nipple ring the size of a doorknob? What the fuck? But no, nothing. It doesn't, like, the only people who seemingly can see this scar are 02 and the audience. And I'm just like, for fuck's sake, guys.
Well, yeah. I'm going to, you know, this is the coward's way out, but I'm just going to throw my hands and say perhaps it's a cultural difference where the sort of social mores and kind of what's the word I'm looking for, the standard, like, group dynamics in those situations where you, that might not be something you would ask. I have no idea if that's true. No fucking idea. But maybe that's like a trapdoor excuse. But someone should have asked, I mean, or at least, like, be shown giving him the side eye. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck is that thing?
Why even have it in there then in the first place if it's not going to be, you know, made use of in that way?
Oh, yeah.
Again, first draft syndrome, it really comes across as that.
Uh-huh, yeah. That would be, that connection should have been made, yeah. I bet that would be something that they'd like to do over again.
Wouldn't surprise me. Anyway, let's move on.
To the most shippable couple. This is the known shippable right here. Ichigo and Ikuno. They get to have their little moment under the umbrella. It's so sweet. Ichigo's gonna stay with her. And then she says, hey, I've got this book. Go play. It's no big deal. Are you sure? Yeah, go ahead. And they share a nice, warm, tender smile. And then fucking asshole supreme Mitsuru walks up. And whoo, it gets cold. I got a little chill in the air. Because things between those two, Mitsuru and Ikuno, they are frosty.
Oh, they are, yes.
Man, no love lost between those still partners, still compatible partners. And they have a very terse, cold exchange in which, you know, that's, I guess, the time when he's, like, off screen is saying, let's go explore this neat place, which we'll get to. And then we have the whole, like, the kiss business, which we talked about, like, the boys pulling Hiro aside, who was having a nice moment with 0-2.
They cut blocks him.
They did. They were like, what's a kiss, bro? Oh, man, you beat us to it. Oh, no. I need to experience this. Let me kiss you. That was pretty funny.
That was amusing. Also because Zarabe's animations were really good in this bit as well.
I did, yes. I enjoyed that. That was nice. Good good on you, Yamaguchi, for this part, for the directing this part well. So the cave and the hidden path. Mitsuru finds this sort of Dark Soulsian hidden path into a ruined city. But while they are walking, before they discover that the path in fact leads to a small populated, previously populated area, they go through a cave and they walk through the kind of they walk through the woods. And there's a really nice moment between Goro and Hiro where Goro is like, hey, you guys, you and 0-2, like, you're different than the rest of us partnerships. Like, is there a kind of a relationship that is beyond even being partners? Like, you guys talk about love. Like, what is that? Like,
what is love?
Yeah.
Baby don't hurt.
Yeah.
Baby.
Cue the Hathaway.
Don't hurt me no more.
Yeah. Classic, awful, awful Saturday Night Live sketch that if you go back and watch it now, if you laughed at it when you were a kid and you go back and watch it now, you will be horrified. So perhaps just don't do that. I thought this was interesting that he said, like, if love is what you guys have, like, I don't know, maybe that's not what Ichigo and I have. Being with her is fun, but it also hurts sometimes. And I just wanted to be like, Goro, man, come here. It's love. It is love. Because love does hurt sometimes. Oh. And you're a sweet, observant kid. Although Ichigo clearly doesn't love him.
Nope. Even though I've actually come to the conclusion, by the way, that if we're going to make Macross comparisons, Goro is the Michiru.
Ah, that means he did.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't. I mean, we're going to have a Deadpool going on all these characters at some point.
We need to start a suicide pool every week.
just who dies first.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's what, and you pick, yeah, everyone has to pick. Oh, God, that would be incredible. We got to figure out a way to make this happen.
So, the ruins. This was the highlight of this episode for me. And no, it's not because of the fact there's no fan service in it. Shut up.
It's the teeny tiny bit of meat on the small chicken wing.
Yeah, it is the chicken straw, you know, the beef jerky. But when I was watching this as they found this little ruined village place, first off, I really like the music that kicks in. Again, the music in this show is always good. It really sold the mystery and mood of this. I thought it was fantastic. Two, as they had these, like, panning shots of various, like, ruined structures, like, everything's overgrown with vegetation, for example, buildings have collapsed or caved in over time, I thought to myself, what is this reminding me of? I'm having something in the back of my head that I've seen before that this is familiar to. And I actually had to look it up before we started recording this podcast, and it was pictures that I've seen taken in, I think it was the past 2 years, of the area around the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant, which had a Chernobyl-like incident back in 2011 when the tsunami hit.
Right.
And I can obviously say for certain if they used pictures from that as reference material, but that's what it struck me as, and it felt quite powerful looking at that, like that this place seems to have just literally been packed up and abandoned in a hurry. We've got cars and buses in there. There's a book, which we'll get to in a moment, that's just literally been left on the floor. Whatever happened to this place, it was abandoned super fast. And it really sold, like, this idea to me, like, that there's... I mean, take, for example, the rest of the world that we've seen. Most of it seems to be desert.
Yes.
But this place is verdant. It's overgrown with nature. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, let's put some puzzle pieces together here. Why is this way? And the rest of the world is mostly just sand and dust.
Where did the ocean come from?
Where indeed? Because you might note, for example, in the plantations, they have a artificial environment Zero-Two has mentioned a number of times how she wants to swim in a real ocean. Hero has mentioned something about flying out in the open air. So, how has the environment ended up this way? I have a theory. I have a theory, a mad theory, if you will, but a theory nonetheless.
Okay.
So, let me pitch this here. This could be completely off base. First off, the Klaxosaurs are not a natural or alien enemy. They are a man-made creation. Secondly, they are the man-made creation of an opposing force in a war between whoever the plantations were but are now, and this, we'll call them this other faction. And that faction lost, but in doing so, the Klaxosaurs have got out of control. And the reason that the war was happening, in my opinion, this is, again, mild fan theory, so take this with a gigantic amount of salt here, folks, but my theory is that this whole magma energy thing that they've been thinking of has actually drained the planet dry. It's Mako energy from Final Fantasy VII. After all, the plantations have to keep moving around to drill this stuff, and they've just arrived at a fairly verdant area. That might explain why the place is, you know, dried up elsewhere, because it's natural resource exploitation. And so the Klaxosaurs are just the remaining, like, autonomous weapons that have not yet been dealt with from this after effects of this war that's left most of the planet in ruins. And the Grand Crevasse that was mentioned before is, I would argue, probably their primary nest. That would at least make sense to me. That's a wild theory. And the problem with that theory is that apart from it just being a theory, it doesn't tie in any way into the character's motivations, whereas it really should do. Apart from, of course, the fact that if that's true, they've been lied to. But at this point, the fact that they're not being told the whole truth is patently obvious.
Yes.
We're just trying to put the pieces together now. And the problem with this approach for me is I'm not generally speaking all that fond of mystery for mystery's sake. I want there to be a bit more meat with character stuff. Or, if you are really good at it, you tie the two together. So, I mean, I think back to Frontier again. Unfortunately, I have to keep making this comparison. But I think back to Rancor. I think back to myself, okay, we've got the whole thing about who the Vardra are, where did they come from, what do they want, what do they do, and then we've got Ranka's character arc of how she decides that she has to go off on her own, leave her, you know, bow behind, leave her affection for Alto, try and figure out who she is, and also unravel the Vardra mystery. The two weave together.
The shitty brother.
Well, he was a mind-controlled cyborg, so I can give him some space for that.
Hopefully his fashion sense was also a result of mind control.
I would say it was, absolutely. I'm actually going to bring Rancor up again later when we discuss the concepts of love triangles, because I think that needs to be discussed in context of France, because, oh boy.
Okay, you know, this part, especially when the music kicked in, as you say, it really made me think of, very strongly, another anime that I had been thinking of off and on while watching this. That I think you would really like, called Shinsekai Yorai, or From the New World in English. So Shinsekai Yorai is a dystopia. It is one of those, like, human society has been radically reformed in the wake of some kind of terrible events, and, like, the kids are living under state-imposed, like, lies and delusions. Mm-hmm. And in about episode 5... similarly, they are wandering around in the woods, these kids, and they sort of discover an old robot, and the robot basically info dumps, just barfs out all the truth about the world onto them, so there's no more of this kicking the mystery can down the road. Like, they sort of learn the most of the truth about their world, and then the rest of the show is them dealing with that, and... you know, at some point, like, the show starts out and they're, like, primary school kids, and then they're high school kids later on, and, you know, older teenagers, and then by the end, those that remain are adults. It's really good. It does world building and mystery, like, a bazillion times better than Frank's.
Yeah. I'm reminded of a novel, specifically Arthur C. Clarke's The City and the Stars, which was of a city in which all the people who lived inside it believed the way a certain way things were, and it turns out it's not the case. Quite a good classic sci-fi novel, by the way. No Klaxosaurs in that, I'm afraid, and no giant robots, I'm sorry to say. But it's quite good. But yeah, I did quite like this whole sequence of them exploring the place and just making observations. One particular observation that's, well, it's the smoking gun of a theory that I postulated previously, and I think other people have as well, which is that Kokoro wanders into a pharmacy. And in wandering into this pharmacy, she looks around and there's a book on the floor. So she picks up this book, it's completely covered in dust, and she dusts off the book. And it says, preparing for your first childbirth, how to look after your baby, or something to that effect. She's at this point saved by Mitsuru as a poltergeist knocks over a chest of drawers on top of her. I don't know how that happened, but hey, whatever. It happened. And the closing shot of this is a close-up of the book as she's holding on to it. She also says, baby, ? Like, she doesn't know what a baby is.
Yep.
So, well, you can make... I don't even need to tell you the inferences you can make from that.
You know, Kokoro picks it up, the book about motherhood and babies. And, of course, she, of course, is depicted later as having a motherly sort of attitude in general, but specifically toward Miku, Zorome's yes. partner. There's a kind of a mother-daughter relationship happening there.
Yep.
Which there's some dots to connect. And I wonder what this portends for her character, you know. Mystery.
Yeah.
Death flags.
I'm just wondering what'll happen if one of the adults discovers that book.
Oh boy.
Confiscation's gonna happen, but we're most telling is how they react.
They don't know what babies are, and there are no adults on their plantation. And Zorome in particular is fixated on this idea. Like, he says that the ruined cities are, quote, nothing like the cities the adults live in. And he later on gives a fiery speech about how great it is to be useful to the adults.
And to Papa.
Yeah.
Praise Papa.
That they're guarding them, they're taking care of them, they're helping them retain their lifestyle. And so this utility will allow them to one day become adults, which is, like, for him, the ultimate honor and prestigious prize, which is, like, incredibly sad to me that you have this kid who is fixated on, A, growing up and becoming an adult, and B, utility. Like, the highest goal you can aspire to is to be useful. Tremendously sad to me.
Basically citizenship from Starship Troopers, pretty much. And... there's two things I have to say to that. First off is that Zorome's not got the bigger picture in mind, which is that, well, once he's an adult, then what? Great, you crossed the finish line, now what are you going to do?
Well, he's a kid, he's not, yeah.
But yeah, but he's not being given any education or any idea of what that's like.
Yeah.
That's being deliberately withheld from him.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a mythic, it's sort of like what you think about, like, it's when a lot of people say, like, and then we'll go to heaven, or we'll be in heaven together. And then what? Well, there is no and then what. Like, that's the stopping point for the mind. That is that's the aspiration or the ultimate kind of reward. And there's no need to think beyond there. It seems like that's what adulthood might be for Zorome.
Indeed. And you remember before how I said that I had changed my opinion on which character Zorome is as far as Final Fantasy?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Uh-huh.
He's not Cypher. He's Wacka from Final Fantasy X. Zorome, though, is all boasting about it, though. And that's the thing about Wacka is that he, of course, in the end, does receive quite severe wake-up call to the fact that his religion is a lie. He's like the last one who comes around to the idea that it's all a complete falsehood.
Poor Wacka.
Wacka was not great character, but then but Final Fantasy review coming later on, their ace of whatever our next podcast is, whatever. Anyway, moving on. But that being said, when he said, as his closing line, I can't, we'll become adults, I'm like, Zorome, it ain't gonna happen, mate.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't gonna fucking happen.
Death flags ahoy!
this is gonna be some Logan's Run shit, but they're gonna have the age halved. Like, you are literally gonna be turned into Soylent Green. That's it. Like, the amount of references I could make here, but, they are... But none of this is going to bear out for them.
No.
Not one bit of it. It's all just going to go really badly wrong.
They have to have their goals and dreams to get them through the night.
I suppose, if nothing else, it's actually nice that this episode exists. If nothing else, they can have some fun before what I expect to be, well, everything going really badly, really fast.
A giant fist descending from the heavens to smush them. This is all happening, by the way, at a barbecue, which takes place after a quick scene I wanted to briefly talk about, which I can't get enough of this, and maybe this is time to talk about love triangles, but the Ichigo versus 02 rivalry continues. Oh. Because she being Ichigo, sees a poster of a boy and a girl kissing. I guess she's looking through like a bookshop window or something, and she's wondering about, you know, Kisu. And then 02 sort of spins and dances up. It's like, me and darling have kissed, me and darling have kissed. What have you done? Have you shared it for realsies? And like is very much playful, yet also kind of mean to little Ichigo.
Oh, you know what's kind of ironic? Like, 02 is teasing her, but at the same time, I get the impression that she knows that something must have happened or, like, between them, because I know full well why Ichigo didn't outright say, oh yeah, I did kiss Hiro, because, well, let's put how many of them went there and how many would be coming back minus one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She'd have been, you know, a red stain on the floor. So, there's that. I do have to say, though, I just continue to feel bad for Ichigo, not just because of the fact that, like, this keeps happening, because the narrative seems to have nothing else it wants to do with her, but just to dump on her.
I was afraid of this, of that possibility. I don't know. I mean, I feel like this episode walks a fine line, and she's not... I mean, let's be real, though. I think if anyone is expecting her to end up with Hiro, like, that's never going to happen. Right.
Nope.
So she's not going to grab. She's not going to grab that brass ring. So
nope.
You have to aim your sights a little lower in terms of her character getting to shine.
Yep.
And I think she, you know, the end of the episode is good stuff for her. And the reason 02 feels that she has to come up and do this is because she knows Ichigo's a threat. She knows Ichigo's a threat to what she has between her and her darling. And I don't know how, like, you know, polyamory works in this world. Like, who knows? Hiro could have a harem by the end.
Oh, a Franks with two slots for the girls, and he has a handle on one and a handle on the other. Oh, fuck me. No, I'm not.
Three Lizzie.
Okay, let's talk about love triangles. Now, generally speaking, I am okay with love triangles if they accomplish one of two things, or both even. But at least one of these two. First off, that the love triangle in some way drives or motivates the characters in ways not related to the actual romance itself. This is again the Ranker example that I'm so fond of bringing up because it's such a textbook gold standard of how you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, that the love triangle itself is a compelling competition, that there's actual genuine who's it going to be? Who, right. You know? Franks' love triangle fits none of these criteria. At least not as it stands. Because Ichigo does not have anything going on as a character outside of how she feels about Hiro. And you might say, well, what about her stumbling as a leader? And again, I point out, that's because of Hiro. It's not because of herself, you know, struggling to make do or rise to the occasion. It's all about Hiro messing with her head. Or rather, her feelings messing with her. And two... it's not a compelling, you know, competition because did you see episode 2? Have you seen everything that's happened since then? I mean, I'm surprised 02 even actually bothers. Unless that is perhaps maybe a more of a reflection on 02 having just a little bit of paranoia that you might not expect. You know, being overly clingy, perhaps. It's not unheard of. But that's a character trait that 02 gets, not Ichigo. So this love triangle is in service of absolutely nothing. And, okay, you might be thinking, let me just throw it out there now, and this is a mild spoiler for when we eventually podcast about it, but you think I'm, like, all in on Macross about this? Macross Delta's love triangle is fucking terrible, so trust me, I'm not being biased here. I'm just going by these standards that I've thought about when it comes to how to create a compelling love triangle.
Also, Macross 7's love triangle sucks.
Well, there you go, folks.
It's barely there, in my opinion.
Oh. Macross Delta's love triangle is, well, if you take a three-legged stool and saw one of them off, does the stool still stand up? Of course it fucking don't. And if you've watched Delta, you know exactly what I'm referring to, but we'll get signed a different podcast.
Okay. The barbecue, right? It has a few compelling parts to it, I think. So Goro offers the olive branch in the form of a stick of barbecued, like, corn and vegetables. To 02, basically his way of saying, like, you're one of us now, like, sorry we were mean and weren't cool, we thought you were gonna kill Hiro, but you're a good hang, so have this, delicious corn and be our friend.
Ah, yes.
And that was nice. And 02 goes out for a swim.
Yes.
In the evening. And basically stays in the water by herself for a really long time. Which, can I just say, Hero, you dumbass. What the fuck is the matter with you, dude? Oh, he's just a kid, though. Anyway, he doesn't understand. He doesn't know what he wants. Whatever. Idiot. Fucking idiot. But he gets to talk with his buddies, and they do talk about the Klaxosaurs. Hero, like, says that, basically wonders if the Klaxosaurs would even be a problem if humanity wasn't mining this magma energy. So, but of course, Mitsuru stands up and says, like, no, like, it seems like he believes that they appeared before that, and that the part of the reason, if not the entire reason, that humanity mines this energy is to fight them. This sort of sets up a pretty standard, like, environmentalist, like, man versus nature sort of framework.
Mako energy, again.
That we don't know how much of this is true, you know, if Hero is right or if Mitsuru is right, but this is put out there, right? And then you have, of course, Zorome talking about utility, which we've discussed. But he also throws out the word Nakama, which brought, I'm not going to say this show made me get misty, but it was a nice, like, aw, this is sweet. Like, the yipping dog, the little dachshund biting at the heels of Hero earlier, like, has basically fully accepted him and said, what, did I say something weird? He's our Nakama. Like, we are Nakama. We are family. We're a team. We're together. We're united. And everybody smiles at each other. You know, Ichigo stands up and gives the formal, like, as a leader, I welcome you and O2 to our team. I'm going to work your ass off, so get ready, chum. And everybody has a laugh.
It needs to be said, though, would she have made that speech if 02 was there?
It's a fair question. Everyone's getting along quite well in her absence.
02 has gone out to swim on her own, and now it chose making that speech. And I'm thinking, you can say all you want that 02's a part of the team, but her actions, and to some extent your own, don't mirror that. After all, 02 does not interact with any of the other kids really at all in this entire beach episode. She is still the outsider.
Yeah.
And I like that.
I do too. And like you said, Ichigo still has misgivings, you know, because of course they had a bit of a confrontation, teasing, of course, in the Ruined City. But yeah, this is all really interesting. Like, I think that they could get to a place where they do coexist with an aloof team member. You know, that's just the nature of some workplaces, and people get the jobs done just fine. But I don't know. Because I think it's pretty clear that 02 wants to monopolize all of Hiro's attention.
Indeed. And Franks' warning again?
Yeah, right. I mean, she, like, at one point looked longingly, I feel like, or at least there was a touch of longing in her look over to the fire with everyone laughing and talking. And she's out there swimming in the cold water by herself, and they are around the warm fire and friendship, yada yada. It's very sort of on the nose, but still effective, I think.
Yeah.
Demonstrating the relationships and where everybody kind of stands in relation to each other.
Indeed.
Then we have, of course, a lovely walk that Ichigo and Hero share. And I was dead surprised that they got to have this moment. I thought that the rustling that Ichigo heard as she sort of roused herself from sleep was 02 going to snuggle with Hero or something. I was so sure, but no. Hero got to walk with Ichigo, and I guess 02 was still hanging out in the water.
Oh no, her horns were just sticking above the water, so he swings towards like a shark.
the Jaws thing.
Well, okay, this scene again is another case of here's some good stuff and here's some stupid stuff. Good stuff. When they walk, Ichigo starts walking behind and matching Hiro's footsteps.
Ah, yes.
Which is really cute, and I like that. But it also shows her weakness, that she's following, not literally such, like, she's caught in his shadow, she's caught in his wake. She can't help but be where he is or follow where he goes. She's the leader, but she's the one, you know, stepping behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's indicative of her whole get-up with him, basically, her whole hang-up.
Yeah.
Also, this might be one of those blind spots you mentioned, but one of the things that does happen here is that they mention the stars. The stars are out, and this is all very pretty and nice. And Hero points out that that's the constellation Orion, which is a real constellation. And the info you can take away from this is Earth. Now, you might think, well, of course it is. But we didn't really have any confirmation of that prior to now, and I always tend to just want to make, you know, think to myself, is that necessarily true or not?
Right.
So that's that confirmed, at least.
Yeah.
But then Hero's a douchebag in this scene as well, because... He can't help it. He can't, like... Do people just not want to hear Ichigo talk? Do they just want to say, no, shut up. Do they want to do Kanye West on a constantly?
Mm-hmm.
The poor fucking girl is pouring her heart out to him, and he's going, oh, look, Ichigo's doing stuff. Shut the fuck up! Let the fucking woman talk, you absolute ass gobbler! Just fuck off! I don't believe this fucking show, I swear. It's so comical.
Oh boy. This is like so standard as well for shonen romance stories. This shit to happen.
Oh, honestly, the only way this would have been dumber is if suddenly one of the guys just came out of nowhere, threw a frisbee, and it cold cocks her on the back of the head.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you saying something?
I'll start again. Sorry.
No. That's the joke.
Sorry. I didn't get that. My apologies.
I mean, as standard as it is, it's still, like, aggravating when you're invested in some characters. And, another thing I wanted to point out, in addition to the two sets of footprints becoming one, was they made a point to show the shore, or rather the tide coming onto the shore and eroding those footprints.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, this could just be them wanting to show, like, let me show a scene, and it doesn't mean anything. But I don't know. I think you have a license to read into that and be like, well, what does this actually, does this mean that...
Like the scar? Or the kissing?
Right. Correct. Is this just a thing we're doing to tease you and not really follow through on? Or does this mean, like, that the memories that they have together are going to be eroded over time, or that that Hero is not going to, like, make a lasting impact, you know, or what? I guess we can see, looking back, if it holds any extra meaning. But I thought it was, it felt intentional, that shot. Much as the footprint thing felt intentional.
Yeah. I think that a lot of what happens in Franks in general is meant to feel intentional, but the point is that this show has already so utterly bamboozled itself and done itself in with not delivering on what it has set up that I now can't truly buy into any setups that happen or lampshading. And that's that's actually really fatal for a show, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, the book, for example. The book will come back up. I'm fairly confident that. You can't just literally have them forget about that.
They spent so much time on drawing it.
Yeah. Like, setup and payoff. That's one of Frank's biggest problems. Here's a setup for something, and maybe I was reading too much into what episode 5 would deliver. Episode 5 promise will be delivered later. Maybe that's true. But in that case, you need to rewatch or at least proofread the script. Just make absolutely certain the way things come across. And then, you know, properly deliver it. Don't pad stuff out that doesn't need to be there. Like, if Goro learning of Hero's techno cancer was not going to pan out into anything, why is it in the script? And that applies to so much. I don't know. So, all in all, we learned tidbits. We learned bullet point. We learned bullet points in this episode, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's all I really have to say on it.
I think... there is an interesting part in which Nana and mysterious crew cut guy, who we don't know, the other officer, are riding up an escalator.
Oh, the giant escalators again.
The non-animated escalator. It looks like they're just sitting still.
The fuck is the point of that actual hall?
I know.
It's just giant escalators into fucking nothing.
But they're taking one of these trips and... he's so talking about Hero and Zero Two, and he says, like, sometimes you have to be introduced to external factors, to different
foreign
variables,
foreign
elements, yeah, in order to adapt. And I'm fairly certain he wasn't talking about their trip to the beach, but I believe that actually reflects Dr. Franks' intention. I think it was his idea to let them come to the beach, not to have them relax, but I think the fact that, like, this group is under special care and special observation, like, said by like the Mecca bishops, and Dr. Franks has taken this Dr. Franks has taken a special interest. And so I think for whatever his reasons are, like, he knew that stuff was there, right? The ruined village, I believe, the ruined city. And I think he wanted them to get a taste of all that, to start on their journey towards finding out the truth of things. Now, why he wants that, like, if it's good or bad that he has in mind for the kids, like, who knows?
It's a mystery.
But I think that that's part of it. Yeah, I think that he wanted to introduce foreign elements in order to continue to have them adapt.
Could be. If I had to say one thing, though, is that if this show wants to preach about introducing foreign elements to adapt, then the foreign element it needs to adapt is a good script.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba.
There you go.
Hey.
Actually, there's one other thing I want to add, because this is not a criticism of the show, more as it's an observation of a missed opportunity. So let's go back all the way to Mystery Blonde Kid, who we don't care about.
Shit. I've already forgotten about him. Like, I'm not even kidding. When you said Mystery Blonde Kid, there was half a second. It took my brain longer than it should have to remember who you meant.
It was half a second longer than it was necessary. You shouldn't have even cared about him. Okay. But, okay. My point is this. Blonde Kid mentions this is the first time anyone has survived with 02. Now, let me pitch an idea to you here, folks, now we've got past episode 6 and Hero has lived. What if Hero found out that 02 had another partner who had lived more than 3 times, but for other reasons was now no longer partnered with her? Think about it for a moment. Hero currently is all special, like, you know, character, like, you know, his relationship with 02 is defined by the fact that he's the only one she can pilot with, and that's what makes him unique and worthwhile.
Oh, that's gonna, yeah, he won't be unique in that regard, I feel.
Exactly, that's the point.
Yeah.
What a character development point that would have been for him to realize that.
I think it will happen.
You think that we're going to find out? Because bear in mind, Mystery Blonde Boy did say that it's never happened. And that's why I'm saying it's a missed opportunity, because he has pretty conclusively stated that, you know, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
Unless we choose to think he's a liar.
Or just doesn't know everything. Yeah. I have felt for a while that would be a pretty obvious place for them to go. Maybe even as a something at the end. You know, where a mystery person no one knew about, or no one knew, like, oh, you're still alive? But, I mean, who knows? It's just completely wild speculation. But if he is telling the truth, that you're right. I do think it's, that would have been kind of a layup, and they're just making it harder on themselves. But I guess it would be kind of good. So the more I think about it, yes, it's an obvious play, but I'm not actually sure I'd like to see that play out. I don't know.
Well, I think it would just be interesting for our character, who literally has no real personality or distinguished attributes, to actually develop some in response to a revelation that he is not as unique as the world seems to make him out to be.
That would be good.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, and then that would tie into the whole idea of him treating 02 as a person, like, you know, all the embarrassing things he said, like, I want to pilot you, blah, 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 like, that, you know, that kind of stuff. So, missed opportunity, I think, but I'm only pitching it here. I'm sure they have a different vision for the show. And who knows? Not meant to necessarily know everything that's going to happen next, but where we're going to go next, I don't know still.
Can I ask you, how did you feel about 02 and Hiro's relationship as it's played out in this episode and maybe the last episode as well? Like, I don't know. Like, she remains, of course, elusive and not entirely graspable by him. You know, definitely keeps him on his toes, so to speak. But there's a bit of an edge that was present early that is no longer there. Perhaps it's because he's cleared whatever hurdle he needs to clear. But I don't know. I felt like something is missing.
I'll tell you what's missing. I know exactly what it is. Hero is not self-actualizing or taking any initiative in this relationship. Whatever relationship you want to call it, at all. It's all her. She is leading him by the nose every single second.
And it's just, like, all praise. Like, I mean,
that too,
for her to say, like, you're the reason that I'm where I am is utter horseshit.
Yeah. And,
I mean, of course it's what you're going to say to the boy you're in love with, I guess, but, like...
Is she, though?
It's a little, she's laying it on pretty thick. And then he's just sort of like, cool. Oh, you're touching me. Oh, man, what do I do? What do I say? And the boys grabbed me and took me away. Oh, you're going to swim again? I won't go with you. I'll just stay up here and eat bell peppers. Thanks.
Now that you've said that, it is actually just a couple of notches above being on Love Hina level of
one guy fucking
worshipped by the women around him. Like, and then also just freaking out whenever, you know, they get close to him in any way. That age-old trope that I absolutely despise.
I hate that, man. It doesn't...
Is he scared of his own erection?
Like, I mean, yes. Hell. Like, she does, you know, caress him and, like, come up and lick his face and talk about kissing, and that throws him off. And that's good. I just want, like... I want more of, like you said, either him contributing or... Rather than her following him around, her blazing her own trail and him following after her and struggling to keep up. I think either of those would be more interesting than kind of what's happened lately.
To be fair, she does do that at the end when she goes off swimming on her own.
Yeah, but I feel like it's... And I could be wrong about this, but the note that it hit strongest, that action, for me was, I wish Hero would come out here with me and I could have him all to myself.
Ah, I see. So she was being subtle about it as opposed to just literally grabbing him and taking him.
I could be wrong about that because sometimes she's subtle and sometimes she's very much not. Like, she's erratic. So I don't know. I like her very much and I just want to see, I want what's best for her, damn it.
She should be another show then.
Find a better boy.
Again, like I said before, though, there's not a lot of great choice out there.
That's true.
I'm so very sorry to say.
Yeah.
I have actually just remembered one thing, though, that I did find funny about this, that's never commented on, and in hindsight, I get why it happened, but I do love the fact that none of the cookie-cutter kids are with these guys.
No.
they all went off elsewhere. They don't get a beach holiday. They're off back to the fucking, you know, gym or the obstacle course or whatever.
Yes. The sleep machines in Chrono Trigger. Oh, that God. Are like, you got a full night's rest, but you're still hungry.
Put them back in a tank.
Yes.
Oh. Like,
yeah, I don't even know if they'd want to be hanging out with Zero Two.
I don't know. Like I said to you before, though, I don't know what the show's about. Now, I'll be fair, this episode's construction doesn't mean it's going to add a lot to that. You know, it's not going to give us much more of an idea. That's the way it is. This episode is primarily about giving you fan service. There's not really any way around that.
Yeah.
All the things we've just talked about, for however long we might talk to them about, they're not really all that consequential. They're just smoke and mirrors. Here's a thing that may be important later, and here's another thing that may be important later. And here's character beats that we already know that have already been established, but we're doing it again. And yeah. here's a thing that should have been relevant, but isn't. And
right.
And that's really it. Honestly, like, and again, I have to say, if you wanted to come into this for the cheesecake, for the fan service, it's not that good. It's just kind of eh. I mean, there's some really, like, gratuitous, and I say gratuitous, say not necessarily as a negative thing, I'm talking, like, because this episode is explicitly about the fan service. There are, like, one or two gratuitous bits, and there's, of course, Miku, the motherly thing you mentioned, where she's resting on Kokoro's lap, and all the guys are like, I want to do
look at their envious stares. That made me laugh.
Was Miku flipping all of them off, by the way? She was throwing up the V sign. Get fucked. Amazing.
Amazing. That's great. Oh, boy.
God bless.
all the ladies in the show, God bless them all. They all deserve better, which is true of real life.
Yes, indeed. But yeah, that's really all I have to say about the episode.
Give me your star rating.
I'm not going to give you one. It doesn't. This episode is this episode is consequence free enough that a star rating on its relevance or quality to the show does not matter. It is a thing.
It is.
There you go.
Poof out of five. It is. I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it 2.7 grilled vegetables out of five. just because there's some there, but not all that much. Those 2.7 points are all on the strength of like spending time with the characters that I like again, and the teensy weensy little, you know, revelations or character moments that we get to feed upon. Yeah, that's where those are coming from. But give me more of that. I want more next episode. More meat on the bone, please.
Yeah, I'm in agreement.
The last two were so good. This one definitely was a come down for me, for sure.
I think though, like, if I had to rate this episode, I'd still think that it was good all in all. It just feels inconsequential. And I think that there is potential here for a lot of things to be done with Franks. Like, there's so many different ways this could go, so many different things this show could be. It's just confused about its identity, but I'm probably repeating myself a little bit here. So, I don't know. We're going to keep on watching.
Yeah.
And again, I have to state, like, you know, I'm not against fan service. If it's, you know, just upfront and honest with me as it was here, like, you know, this is literally the DOA Beach Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball episode. There is even a volleyball game. The two girls have one for like 5 seconds before they fuck it up.
I didn't even remember. Oh, yeah, they fell on each other. That's right.
Yeah. All over each other, and the guys are watching like, praise the beach!
Idiots. Oh, man. Well, my palate's definitely cleansed for next time. I was brought back down to earth a little bit, so I'm pretty expectation-free for episode 8.
Maybe that's what they're going for.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a trigger show, but it's basically a trigger show in that Gurren Lagann, there was a bathhouse episode, which was very throwaway. And then right after that were some fucking amazing episodes. Now, that show, even early on, is a tier above what Franks has been able to be. But, hey, I gotta hope, right?
I agree. And it's not like, again, this show can't course correct at this point and can't become about something.
Yeah. Yeah. And, hey, even if it doesn't, up to this point, I've enjoyed myself most of the time. And this was a fine, I mean, this was by no means a bad way to pass, you know, 25 minutes. God, just episode 5, though. So good. Episode 5.
Yeah. That's it. When you watch a show like this that is uneven, it feels like almost like you've been drugged, like you're addicted. Because you keep wanting the hit to be as good as it was the last time that it was good. And that's what we're holding on for. We're basically crack addicts. We're chopping up this show and, like, snorting it.
Kokoro. When you go in that pharmacy, give me a little something, something.
Kokoro.
I need a bump of that episode 5.
Kokoro. Ha. Oh. Well, that's episode 7, the beach one, spring break.
Yep. Why don't you tell the good people out there where they can look you up, Shadon?
Well, you can look me up at Blackpool Pleasure Beach. No, you can't. Sorry.
Pleasure Beach. God.
What a name.
Came back. No. I thought you'd bring that up. Well, never. But then you did, and I didn't expect it to come back up again. And then here we are.
Well, it is a beach episode, so it's a reference to something. No, you'll not find me at beach, folks, but you will find me on the internet at Shaden1010 on Twitter and at curiouscat.me/Shaden, where you can ask me about my favorite beach activities, like drinking and barbecue and drinking. Okay, you don't need to ask me anymore.
Those are very good activities, not confined to the beach.
Indeed.
If you'd like to look me up, then you can tweet me at TheSubtleDoctor or curiouscat.me/TheSubtleDoctor to ask long questions and get possibly long answers. Thank you, Shadon, for playing at the beach with me for this episode of Stream of Thought. So it's been a pleasure, as always, and thank you everyone for listening. We will see you next time for episode 8, but until then, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.